Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com. accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast coming to you from Montecito, California. And before we begin today, just a reminder that there is a group to join that's associated with this podcast. It's the Wealth Formula Accredited Investor Group. And I highly encourage you to join that group if you are you have an interest in potentially participating in private investing that requires you to be an accredited investor. What is an accredited investor, you ask? Well, you don't have to apply to anything. You don't. It sounds like you do, right? Like you have to go to school or something like that. No, you don't. Accredited investor, either you are one or you aren't one, kind of like being pregnant, right? So you either qualify for these criteria or not. And those criteria are: A, you make at least $200,000 per year if you're single for the last 2 years, reasonable expectation to continue to do so. That number goes to $300,000 if you are filing jointly, or you have a net worth of $1 million outside of your personal residence, which means if you bought a house in California 10 years ago and all of a sudden you became a millionaire, that doesn't count. Anyway, so that's what an accredited investor is. Okay, so if you're interested in joining our group and seeing some of the potential opportunities coming by, it's not just real estate. We used to primarily only do real estate, but we have lots of things going on right now, whether it's you hear things about aviation and ATMs, but there is a firewall behind things that we can't share with you that are a specific type that can only be exposed to people in the accredited investor group. So go and check it out. Go to wealthformula.com, sign up for Investor Club, get onboarded, yada, yada, yada. So anyway, let's talk about the show today. And this show, well, let's go back. And, you know, as soon as I finished surgical training, and this was, you know, back in 2008, 9, I opened up a cosmetic surgery business pretty quickly. And when I say business, I mean business, not practice. Right. From day one, it was my intention to create a brand that I could hand off or sell someday rather than create a job for myself. I didn't want to create a job. And I had taken this inspiration from one Mr. Robert Kiyosaki, who I had read his Cash Flow Quadrant book. And I didn't want to be one of those people who was self-employed, who owned a job. The other thing about this business was I wanted to focus on cosmetics. Unlike the traditional way of growing a cosmetic practice, I wasn't planning to go see insurance patients for 10 years and slowly build a referral base. That just wasn't what I was going to do. Nope. I hit the airwaves and pounded the internet like any true entrepreneurial business would do to make myself known and or to make itself known, I should say, because it wasn't that I wanted people to know me. I wanted them to know the business. And how did you do this, you say? You must have been, how did you spend lots of money on marketing and all that? I took a loan. I took a lot of risk, because if you don't take risk, no risk it, no biscuit, right? So I was, I started out with a simple marketing budget of $10,000 a month, which was huge for me. It was huge. Eventually ended up with a marketing budget of over $1 million a year. But it worked. And though I didn't make much money in that first few months, within a year, I was pulling in six figures per month net and it was my first entrepreneurial success, and it was a lot of money for a guy who was just like 2 years out of training. And while I rode that wave, I felt invincible. It lasted for about 2 years, right before the 2012 presidential election. It was the re-election bid of Barack Obama against Mitt Romney. And at that time, I had just decided to buy a building for my business. And I should say that I had just also completed the purchase of a house in the northern suburbs of Chicago. And it cost me $2 million, which again, for me at that time, and it's still a lot of money, but especially back then, that was a lot of money for a guy just a couple years out of training. So in short, during that period, I suddenly found myself cash poor, even though I had a significant monthly money that seemed to be coming in. However, since I'd been making so much money on a monthly basis, I wasn't really worried about any sort of short-term cash crunch. I figured I'd just keep making the money, and I would be back feeling nice and cushy in my cash sooner rather than later. But something happened the October before that election. People stopped buying cosmetic surgery. And I have to say, it was weird. One day it was just like, boom, they stopped. It was like one day people had issues and wanted to you know, get their love handle sucked off. And the next day they didn't care and they just stopped. It was the weirdest thing. I learned this later that the reason, well, possibly the reason that that happened was this phenomena where people don't like to make big decisions when they feel like there is uncertainty of any kind in the air. So a lot of luxury stuff, things that people don't know, kind of die in that October. So note to yourself, if you're a business owner, October of next year, maybe don't plan it on being a great business unless you're selling like food or things that people really need. Anyway, whatever it was killing me. And suddenly I had all these bills and mortgages, and for a moment there, I was scared I was going to kind of lose it all. I remember lying in bed and just like, gosh, this feeling in my stomach, like, man, oh man, how did this happen? I was like, you know, it's so funny in entrepreneurship, you know, it's like one day you're a king and the next day you feel like a pauper. It's insane. Anyway, luckily the election came and went, and fortunately things normalized. But I got to tell you, I promised myself right then and there, I would never let that happen to me again. I just hated that feeling of sort of that, you know, that one business potential, you know, income stopping, that kind of failure. And from that day forward, I told myself I would never rely on a single source of income. And since that time, I've not. In fact, right now, I would say that I don't feel comfortable unless I have at least three solid sources of income. And each income source needs to be able to, you know, pay my bills at least. So I think of my income sources like sort of like a three-legged stool. If there's a problem with one of them, I feel very unstable and I get very antsy, and I need to figure out a new leg. Now, I may sound paranoid, right? I may sound paranoid, but the funny thing is, I don't think most people are paranoid enough. I don't think people realize how tenuous their financial circumstances can be. If you have a job and you lose it, would you be okay? You know, I don't care if you're a doctor or a small business person. No one's, you know, source of income is bulletproof. So you have to have a plan B, in my humble opinion. In fact, in my humble opinion, you need a plan B and C. So if you listen to this podcast, which obviously you are, you might already, you know, have this kind of mindset. You might already be looking for opportunities. And I got to say, this week's episode of Wealth Formula Podcast is really exciting. It got my wheels turning because if you have any extra space in your house, you have a lot, or you have somewhere someone else can park their car. I mean, you could be sitting on, well, it could be a gold mine, but it could be a nice little chunk of money every month that you didn't know that you had. The business is called Neighbor.com, and I thought it was really fascinating. This interview that we are going to have in a minute is with the co-founder and CEO, and definitely want to stay tuned and see if this is something that can potentially help you make a few bucks. And we'll have this interview after these messages.
How do the Rothschilds, the Romneys, and the billionaire hedge fund managers know that you don't about growing and protecting wealth? As you might imagine, the wealthy have a few tricks up their sleeves. One strategy allows you to grow wealth tax-free at a compounding rate with no volatility. It protects your money from creditors and lawsuits, and it lets you invest the same money in two different places at the same time. How about that for amplifying wealth? To learn more, go to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast is Joseph Woodbury. He's a co-founder and CEO of Neighbor.com. He has successfully disrupted the $500 billion self-storage industry by raising more than $65 million from top investors like Andreessen Horowitz, Airbnb, Uber, StockX, and DoorDash. Under his leadership, Neighbor has expanded to all 50 states, providing more storage options than any other company in the industry. Joseph brings his expertise in real estate to help property owners optimize their assets. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So tell me kind of the big picture. I mean, we do, as an investor group, my group includes people on this podcast, we are involved in the self-storage space. It actually has been very, very, very profitable for us over the years. And it has been probably... overall, like I would say, the most consistent and best performing asset classes that even was probably less affected by some of these economic hurdles that we've even encountered, even with interest rates. So, are you coming from a self storage background, or how'd you get into this stuff?
No, I'm not. This is an industry we entered purely by having the pain of using the product. Mm-hmm. It's actually my co-founder. He, you know, had needed a storage unit while he was going to be out of the country for about 4 months. Couldn't find one with any vacancies. You know, the ones that had them were going to charge him a lot. So he ended up storing with a friend. And when he got back 4 months later, he went to pick his items up and just thought, you know, this was such a better experience. I was able to get it closer to me. It was a lot, you know, is a neighborhood I trusted. I felt a lot of peace of mind. I saved a ton of money. Why hasn't someone created a directory or a marketplace where you could find the space available near you? So that's how we got into it. No storage background whatsoever. You know, as we've entered, we've seen the same things you've seen. Probably one of the most unknown and successful industries.
Yeah. Let's back up a bit. Probably most people at this point, in my audience, I should probably don't know what neighbor.com is. So why don't you kind of hit the, you know, give us the high level here.
Yeah. So we're a peer-to-peer storage marketplace. So we take space that already exists, that's sitting there unused and empty, and we rent it out for storage on our platform. It's great for the renters for all the reasons I mentioned. It's great for our hosts because they're earning passive income on the side. We do it with both residential property, which is where we started, very Airbnb style, people renting out their garages, their driveways, their sheds, et cetera. And then we've moved into the commercial space as well. So we'll rent out space around, you know, multifamily complexes or retail mm-hmm. space or office space, just any space that's sitting unused that can be monetized. And now we've grown. We're the only storage operator in the country with renters in all 50 states.
And this is one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show. And we're certainly not really necessarily a business show, but as an opportunistic thing for, you know, people who've got space. So as I understand it, and maybe you can clarify, if you've got space, like if you've got a house with a basement that's sitting empty, you can rent that out on neighbor.com. You basically go out there and say, I've got this space. You put a price tag on it. And, you know, just like Uber sort of disrupted the you know, taxi cab space, you're looking to do the same in self-storage. Is that accurate?
That's exactly right. You know, you mentioned a basement. It could be an RV pad where we come and put someone's boat or their car on the side of your home. We oftentimes people... we'll explain it. We explain it one way. And, you know, the answer to us is, oh, so you're the Airbnb of storage. And that's about right.
Yeah. Yeah. So what you're saying too is like, even if you don't currently have, let's say you don't have the basement, you don't have the garage, but you could install something. You have a big enough yard and you put in, you know, whatever pod or something back there. You could effectively create your own self-storage space wherever you have space by just, you know, by putting stuff in there to help store. Is that, you seen people do that?
Absolutely. People will, you know, start with a shed they already own and then they start making a lot of money off of it. It's a little addictive, and then they buy a couple more sheds to put close by. We've even, you know, oftentimes rental investors, you know, people that own single family homes, maybe you own a portfolio of 10 mm-hmm. homes or something like that. They'll start renting out some space at each home. That's all bottom line NOI, right? You're already paying your expenses.
Right.
Every dollar that just goes straight to bottom line. In some cases, we're doubling cash on cash for these people.
Wow.
And it's mm-hmm. funny, you know, they start with their own properties, but some of them will get smart and they'll realize I should be buying dedicated neighbor spaces. Take Utah, for example, which is where we're based out of. So I can speak to some of the local numbers. $500,000 gets you roughly a townhome in Utah. You could rent that out for, you know, to as a rental property for about $2,000 a month, $2,500 maybe. So, you know, you're earning $25,000-$30,000 on an annual basis. If you did that as a short-term rental, like on Airbnb, maybe you'd earn $40,000 a year instead of $30,000. But instead, if you took that $500,000 and instead of buying a townhome, you bought a vacant lot, you could buy about an acre and a half with $500,000 in Utah. And that would yield you like $100,000 a year. So you're talking 2-3x the earnings on the same amount of invested capital investing into a neighbor property instead of a rental property.
So this is, it's really actually quite fascinating to me. And I think about some of the issues that came up with, you know, came up with Uber, for example, you know, insurance, you know, how safe is a thing. I mean, so you have those issues, right? I mean, if you are, you know, you've got a shed, you've got some kind of shed just sitting out on a lot, you're building a few sheds, I mean, what are the issues that come up? I mean, part of it is going to be, I imagine, you know, there probably are some restrictions to where you can do that kind of thing, or maybe there's not yet. Maybe there are issues with insurance, liability. Can you talk about some of those things? I'm curious.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've said before, you know, people refer to us as a storage company, but it's actually our users that sell storage. We as a company, what we really sell is trust.
Right.
And that's our job. So on the host side, some things we do is, one, we ID verify every single host. You know that host is who they say they are, that they own the land that they own. The second thing we do is we provide a $1 million host guarantee, very similar to Airbnb, that protects the host for any liability issues because they're essentially running a business, right?
Right.
On the renter side of things, you know, one thing we do is the renter's required to submit a full list of everything they'll be storing. The host gets that before they approve, and they can approve or reject that, and they can inspect the items on move-in. We also provide, I think we're the only storage company in the country that provides up to $50,000 in property protection. You can purchase different property protection plans at the point of checkout. So say you book a garage or you book a parking space or something like that. You can choose, you know, a $5,000 plan or $20,000 or $50,000, anything you need custom fit for your item, and we provide that for you. So it's a very safe platform. We also, you know, to our hosts, we guarantee their payments. So if for whatever reason, and honestly, this doesn't happen very often, but it's just a nice perk we provide anyway. If a renter were to stop paying, for example, so long as the items are there, we actually continue to pay out the host, and we just, you know, we're on the hook for the cost.
For whatever lease there is, and yeah.
That's right. We take care of removing items if that's necessary. Uh-huh. So We try to provide kind of a full service, full suite, so that all you have to do as a host is say, I have space, takes me 10 minutes to list it, neighbor brings me a renter, and I never have to worry about another thing again. I just get this passive recurring deposit in my bank account every month.
So what's the risk? I guess, the liability I'm thinking about from the host is, okay, you have a lot. It's a highly secured lot. There's certainly the risk that, somebody breaks into that place and steals somebody's stuff, right? I mean, so you do have that risk. How do you ameliorate that?
Yeah, so different hosts will have different features. And I think that's one of the beauties of a marketplace is you can find what you're looking for, the custom thing, and at a lot of different price ranges. There's a price for everyone. And so we've got, you use the example of lots. So I'll use that example.
Yeah.
We've got lots that, have big fences and security cameras and an access key to get in the gate and things like that. They're going to charge a premium, right? We've also got people just have, a paved area. That's it. No fence, no none. They're going to charge less. And the renter can kind of choose what they want.
Right.
And they can have the options that they want. I'm someone who I'm always looking for the deal or the discount. And so I love using a marketplace where I could get it for, half as much as I could get in the industry. Some other person may want, all the features and they want it right next to their house and the best quality. They're going to choose that. They're going to pay a little more. And what a marketplace does is provide all the options, just like on Uber, how you can, you can get a Honda Accord to pick you up. You can get a black limo SUV to pick you up.
Yeah.
Airbnb, you can stay at a place that's $2,000 a night. Or, when I'm going to San Francisco, I'm staying at the $80 a night place that isn't in the great part of town because I want to save some money.
Okay. So do people who are, maybe you have something that is maybe a little bit less secure and you're offering it for less cheap. If somebody breaks into that place or whatever, and they lose their stuff, you're basically signing off. Are you saying, hey, this is at your own risk and you can have that kind of agreement? Or, I'm just curious about the laws involved and the, sure. I guess, the legal set aspect of this liability for people.
Yep. Yeah. So that's where property protection plans come in.
Uh-huh.
If an individual would like to add a property protection plan to their service, then in the event of a loss or something, that's where we step in and we pay out for that loss.
Okay, got it. And obviously you guys need to determine what that risk is based on what the facility is and underwrite that.
Yeah, sure.
What are the limitations here like people generally have? I mean, first, let's use a VRBO example.
One stat on that just really quick.
Yeah.
To compare us to the traditional self-storage industry. There's a publication called the Self-Storage Almanac that puts out industry stats about self-storage.
Mm-hmm.
And 1 in 10 storage facilities is broken into every single year. 1 in 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's exorbitant because they're all zoned industrial. They're just kind of in those parts of town.
Yeah.
If you look at the FBI statistics on residential, residential has a 14 times lower break-in rate than self-storage does. So your items are actually much, much safer on our platform. And if you look at our platform data,
mm-hmm.
We've been operating in all 50 states, been doing it for 7 years. If you look at our platform data, storage on Neighbor is about 1,000 times safer than storing it in a traditional self-storage facility.
Yeah, so let's talk about sort of the limitations. Airbnb, when it first started, I think it sort of just really got people, I think there was a lot of confusion, right? All of a sudden you've got neighborhoods where, people are like, gosh, all of a sudden that house next door has got revolving tenants and every few days there's some different folks here and we don't like that and we don't like the partying. The next thing you know, there's all sorts of legislation restricting that kind of thing. We've certainly seen that where I live in Montecito, and a good chunk of, you know, this sort of unincorporated Santa Barbara, which is an affluent part of town. I mean, you can't do that, right? What one question is, like, what are the current limitations? Is there a zoning issues with regard to this kind of thing? Like, even if you just saw an empty lot and you want to buy it, do you have to look at all the zoning implications of doing, you know, just putting some things up? Or furthermore, what are the risks down the line, which I'm sure, like, your investors are looking into? They want to know, like, is this going to be something that is, you know, that runs into a lot of the same problems? And then how are you going to overcome them? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. And we share investors with a lot of those companies.
Yeah.
You know, one of our board members sits on the board of Airbnb and Instacart. Mm-hmm. You know, the CEO of DoorDash and StockX, they're invested in the company. So, yeah. By and large, we have a much easier time than Airbnb and Uber. And the reason is because there's a lot more regulation around things anytime you're dealing with people. You know, we often say Airbnb is in the business of storing people. And with Uber, they're in the business of transporting people. So transportation regulation, very heavy. Hospitality regulation, very heavy. You know, there's cleanliness standards, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Room and board tax, all of that. Storage, on the other hand, as you know, as an operator, is a very, very unregulated industry.
Yeah.
Really, the only regulations within storage are around the auction and eviction of items, you know, mm-hmm. And those are pretty easy to comply with, and we help our users do that.
And where you can put a storage facility too.
And zoning where right. you can put it. So right. there's a big difference between primary and secondary use. You know, for those individuals that want to rent out space in and around their home, that's very easy and almost never restricted. The most you'll get there is, like, some cities will have restrictions on the number of vehicles you can have on a lot, mm-hmm. You know, number per room or per person sort of thing. But by and large, you know, that's very easy to do. When you're doing something primary use, like for these investors that are going to buy a property that's only for this, they need to pay closer attention and make sure that they're purchasing a lot in the right area of a city.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, tell us a little bit about where you are with Neighbor right now. Like, how long has this been around? Honestly, I'd never heard about it, but I think it's, you know, obviously this is something that is going to take off, but how long has it been around?
We've been doing this since, you know, we started here in Utah in 2017, mm-hmm. And then expanded to, you know, a few states around that. It's been amazing to see what's happened. Again, I mentioned we're the only storage company now that's in all 50 states. The largest storage company in the world is a group called Public Storage, $55 billion publicly traded company, and they're 39 states. And when I say all 50 states, we're not just in all 50 states. We have active users in almost every city in the country, even cities that have like 2,000 people in them. It turns out storage is this ubiquitous need. A fun industry stat. The storage industry has now built more storage facilities in the United States than we have McDonald's, Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Wendy's, Burger King's, Walmart's, Home Depot's, and Costco's combined. Mm-hmm. So storage is just a massive, massive industry, and it is very undersupplied. So the average occupancy rate in storage for the last decade has hovered in between 92 and 95%.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years ago it was 95%. This year I think it's 92%. Mm-hmm. So there is more demand for this than there is supply. So anywhere that any individuals have space, including in these rural towns, we can get them rented. Our largest markets are going to be the major markets like California, Florida, New York. New York's a very fast growing market for us right now. But yeah, to answer your question, that's about where we're at.
Let me ask you this. Our group owns, you know, quite a few apartment buildings, right? With surrounding parking lot and all that, you know, some land sometime with that. Have you seen people in that space actually potentially go in and you know, maybe put in some lockers or put in, like, what kinds of things have you seen in that?
Oh yeah. In fact, multifamily is one of our top categories. We work with several of the largest multifamily REITs in the country, big $1 billion REITs, where we partner with them. You know, they have multifamily complexes in 50 cities or so across the country.
Yeah.
And there's two types of space that work very well with multifamily. The first is most multifamily buildings have actually already built storage lockers inside for the tenants. Those tend to be about 25 to 30% occupied.
Yeah.
They just don't get used.
Mm-hmm.
So we onboard those onto the platform. We get them to 90% occupancy very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you mentioned, the other thing is the city requires you to build so much parking around it.
Yeah.
And only a number of those. There was a survey done recently that says the average occupancy rate of a multifamily parking is about 80%. So you tend to have about 20% of parking that's unused. And we will take that and we'll rent it out. We have several multifamily partners that are going to earn seven figures of NOI from us this year.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. If there's people, and I know that people listening to this right now, their wheels are spinning. And mine are too. We've got a lot of major, large apartment buildings across the country. Do you guys kind of sometimes help people kind of look into what they've got and come up with some ideas? Do you kind of do that as well?
Yeah. So for those residential users, people renting out space in their home or maybe a lot next to their home, we have a great user onboarding flow. It's all automatic. Mm-hmm. You never have to talk to us. It takes you about 10 minutes mm-hmm. to fill it out. We get you live. For larger portfolios, so for people that own mm-hmm. multiple properties, large properties, we actually have a whole, you know, consultative business development team, industry mm-hmm. specific. So if you're in multifamily, we can evaluate your property.
Sure.
We can tell you what to rent out, where to rent it out, how much you're going to earn. We have the same thing for office. We have the same thing for retail, mm-hmm. Industrial. So we can actually handhold you through that whole process if you're a larger owner. And we'll take care of onboarding your space. So you don't have to go through all the manual work. We can set you up with a corporate account so that you can have multiple people on the account getting, you know, financial reports and stuff like that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Really interesting stuff. And right now, Neighbor is still a private company?
Private company, yeah.
Uh-huh. And is there any way for people to invest in that private company? Retail investors, or are you only looking at, like, you know, big, you know, the major?
To date, we've only taken institutional money, venture mm-hmm. capital.
Got it.
And angel investors.
Got it.
But, you know, we have... allowed some large real estate owners that are partners with us and that have been very successful to invest. And so we're open to that.
Fantastic. Great. Love to follow this closely and see how it goes. Good luck. I think you're obviously onto something really big and hopefully we'll have you on in the near future and you won't be too big for this show.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Buck. Appreciate you having me on.
We'll be right back. Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com. Welcome back to the show, everyone. Hope you enjoyed it. I wonder if your wheels were turning like mine were. And you could tell, right? I was trying to figure out, oh man, could we do something with our apartments? Could we generate, you know, more income? If you're wondering about that, by the way, I am totally looking into that. So yes, I am, and we'll see what happens. But I don't know if it's as simple as it sounds or not, but we'll find out soon. But certainly this is something that I feel like, man, if you've got, you know, some room, if you've got a big lot somewhere, maybe you bought some land and you were going to, you know, maybe build a house on it someday and there's not doing much, maybe this is something that you could use and make some serious money. Anyway, I don't think it's going to put self-storage out of business. I really don't. But on the other hand, I do think that it's going to be, you know, probably something that gets a lot bigger and that people are going to utilize. And so, you know, think about it as another opportunity, the same way that VRBOs came and went, and it might actually be a hell of a lot easier because it's just people's stuff. So anyway, that's it for me this week on Wealth Formula Podcast. This is Buck Joffrey signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.